Hi, Keith.
I am Kieran Bartley. I'm one of the assistant public defenders in Stanton, and we cover Waynesboro and Augusta County as well. And basic court. I was the trial attorney for Mr. Christie, and we made a very specific, limited motion to overturn some of his convictions. These were child pornography cases. He was all 30-some charges. We made a motion to strike at the end of the first day of jury trial on 9 of those motions. And it was based on a case from this court, Cobham. And that case was actually, as it's in the briefs, it was mentioned in the trial court. It was the reason for their granting that first motion to strike.
Yeah, and I appreciate your reference to Cobham, because I agree with you that that is the seminal case for us resolving this information. And Judge Humphreys, I believe, wrote Cobham, was just, he's probably the computer expert on our court, quite frankly, and was able to, was it?
Judge Clements, I think.
Judge Clements? I thought Judge Humphreys was on. Anyway, the discussion in Cobham, as I read it, and as I understand these computers, is the ability for the individual who is accused of the crime to access the information without having any particularized computer expertise. That's the way I understand those cases. In other words, you have all these different subfolders on your computer, things like that are in your recycle bin you can get to, things that are in some of the caches that don't require a specific program you can get to, and others of them require certain programs that allow you to access information. And I think what I saw the trial judge do in this case is sort of analyze what things fell into what categories, and came to the conclusion that those things that your client was convicted of actually fell into the category of things that he could access based upon the evidence presented. That's what the trial judge said. Why do you disagree with what the trial judge concluded there?
Because the as defined by the Commonwealth's expert, I mean we're dealing with orphan files at this moment, which the Commonwealth's expert described as a subset of unallocated files. Mm-hmm. And the unallocated files, by their characteristics, are that these are the ones that are discussed in common, that you need specialized software to get to them. If you don't have that on your, you can't get to those images. And these are all images that were deleted for different reasons. Now, in our case, Cobham didn't distinguish between unallocated files. They were all just one lump. But our case, it did. We had thumb cache memory, or the thumbnail images that were in the thumb cache memory were unallocated. And we had the orphan images, which were in a different location, but both were deleted, both required special software to get to. So I disagreed if that was, I don't remember the judge actually saying that he thought he had access to them specifically in the record. And if he did, I would argue that that's not evidenced in the record, but the Commonwealth's expert made clear that he needed special, that Mr. Christie needed special software to get there. I think if that's the status right now, I would win. But Mr. Jones, I would say, raises a very good point, Your Honor. That would be, when I made the motion, I was actually discussing treating unallocated images as this group, and that there was no distinction between the orphans and the thumb cache images. And I made that in all my motions to the court. I said, these are the same. These are the same motions. This is, if you did this, why didn't you do that one? I don't remember the court explaining it. Mr. Jones's response makes clear that there is a distinction between the orphans and the thumb cache images, or the thumbnail images. And that is that the Commonwealth's evidence, or expert Mr. Moyer, had said there's no way to tell when the thumb cache images were created. There's no record of that.
But there is a way to tell when the orphans were created.
Correct. And that seems to be, on this record, the only difference between those two unallocated images.
Is there any significance to the fact that Cobham talks about the fact that other facts or circumstances that would also prove knowledge?
Yes, I think that's very important. And that's one of the points. I mean, I'm thinking if you're going to decide in the favor of the prosecutor, which is a possibility here, I want to make an argument for two things to restrain how much you agree with them. And it's based on that aspect, partly on that aspect, of what other things must be proven. The first, though, is Mr. Jones, when he cites his cases, and the point I'm specifically referring to that he makes, and when I say it's a good point, is about that date. And then he makes the claim that in the indictment, it's really on or about control or dominion on or about that specific date.
Essentially, whether this is a time is of the essence case.
Correct. And he has on his page 14, he says time is not of the essence of Christie's possession offenses. Now, that, if the court were to agree with that, I just think there are consequences. And I want to point out two things. In Cobb, Cobbin, right as it's making its ruling, will say, and I'm going to give rather 568. Further, no evidence showed other indicia of knowledge, dominion, or control of the 45 photographs. While the evidence may suggest appellant at one time possessed the photographs in the unallocated space, there is no evidence they had dominion or control of them on or about May 19th, on or about.
But is Cobbin factually distinguishable from what we have here? Because in the instant matter, what we have is a situation when the police are executing the search warrant. The Sharia, is running.
Correct.
And there's information that none of the files could have been uploaded by outside sources. They are able to also indicate the dates when these orphan images would have actually been created, which would have been a short period of time, just days from the date that the search warrant's executed.
And that's what makes that is what makes this different from Cobb. And I'm agreeing with you on that one.
Nice to be agreed with, but.
Okay, but what I want to go further, I mean, I just want to make sure that if you go further with the Commonwealth, that you're not going to say that it's not of the essence, time is not of the essence, because clearly in Cobbin, when that portion I just read where they said they knew that Cobbin, there was evidence to suggest that he did have it at some other time, he had possession and control and dominion of the images at some other time, but they were nonetheless going to overturn his conviction because he didn't on this time, on the time mentioned in the indictment. And if the Commonwealth's position, I don't know if he were going to push it this far, but it seemed like from that line where he said time is not the essence, if time is not the essence, they are suggesting that you could have an indictment that would say, you've child pornography at some time in your adult life. Because time is not of the essence. And so if we can prove any time while you're an adult, you've got possession of child pornography on your computer, we've got you.
But I don't think the Commonwealth approached it like that. They approached it as basically a circumstantial case, and I think we all agree that the computer was password protected. It had your client's password,
yes.
his nickname.
Yes.
Scheherazade was running on the computer, and it indicates that the computer was logged on 20 times between February 10th and March 1st, and that Scheherazade had access over 200 times during that period. So doesn't that circumstantially connect the dots?
I would say no. I mean, what really connects the dots is the creation date. That's the one that does it. That Shariza is running, I don't see that as having any relevance here because Shariza can run all the time. It's not a crime to run Shariza, and you can pull anything down. There's testimony in the court about you can access any kind of files from Shariza, and he had it legitimately, and it was fine.
Yeah, but the Shariza, I thought the implication about the Shariza running was the fact not just the other files had been created from the Shariza, but in fact there were files that he would actually have to download from Shariza. It wouldn't be an outside source being able to upload them. That was one of the points made about the fact of Shariza.
If you're saying yes, I don't remember us addressing that point on defense that there was someone else who might have uploaded the images. That was actually I was much more focused on just the possession and control, dominion and control. And if there was Shariza running, I mean, I would say that is no more appropriate than the fact that he had the computer, because he could always have turned the computer on and downloaded things from the Shariza program. That was, unless he proved that the computer wasn't there, I don't think it's any worse that he had the Shariza running, because he could. The creation date of these three images, though, tell us that it was not that day. You know, that's not when these images were created. They were created 2 days before and 9 days before. So the fact that Shariza is running that day, I'm not seeing that as a significant question for the jury.
But how about the following? How about the fact that certain search terms were retrieved?
That is another good point. Sorry, but when we get to the issue of if you're going to rule something like time is not of the essence, those words are definitely suggestive. And we're referring, you're smiling, I hope you understand, that these are the Commonwealth's evidence, or expert was able to retrieve terms that were used by the search, and presumably by Mr. Christie, but there was no evidence of when those search terms were used. So they can't deny that, connect them to the creation date of the one 2 days before and 9 days before. And so if Cobman thinks we can pin Mr. Cobman with having dominion and control at some time earlier, but we're not going to convict him, we're still going to overturn it because of he didn't have dominion and control on this day. There's got to be a limit. Time has to be important. The court in Cobman, unfortunately, doesn't tell us what is the limit. Is it 2 days? Is it 9 days? Is it 2 months? They don't tell us. But time is clearly important, because otherwise they would have left Mr. Cobman be convicted, because they say there's enough evidence to suggest.
I mean, you need to be careful what you ask for, because theoretically, then, if we're going to say to the Commonwealth, you had to make these things absolutely temporal, people are going to end up with 300 and 400 charges every time they download something from Sharazov. So you got to be careful there, I think.
No, I understand. And that's another issue with this, I would say, with how far, if you're going to agree with the Commonwealth, that the dominion and control issue. And that's, is this, the images that were downloaded on the 2nd and the 9th day prior show that they were also, it's not clear when they were deleted, but we know when they were modified. They were modified, which is another reference in the evidence, and it shows that the image was, again, accessed, modified is probably a better word, but it's seconds after it is created, and then the images, just the evidence as far as we know, they could have been deleted at that point. They could have been deleted seconds after they were created. And does that demonstrate the kind of control that would be a conviction? On cross-examination with Mr. Moyer, the expert, he admitted that if you were downloading on Shariza, and our example was a Mickey Mouse image, if you wanted to download a Mickey Mouse image, you sought it out, and Shariza would give it to you as a folder, an inside, or a file, but that file might be a zip file, which is a collection of lots of files. And so when you opened it up, you would indeed have your Mickey Mouse image, but you could also have, and he just said many, there was no limit to how many other images, many more that you didn't realize because it's an archive file, it packs them all together. If that is what happened, as a defendant, you would see, there's my legitimate image, and gosh darn, here's many more that would come in as thumbnails, tiny little images that you would see. Whether you could perceive what they were is not clear, and if you did perceive what they were, if you could go scroll through them all, you might delete them saying, this is pornography, that is pornography, that is pornography, I don't want that, don't want that, don't want that. And yet, if we're saying that, oh my gosh, within seconds, you didn't get rid of it immediately, you had dominion and control of that image, is that the kind of situation that we want to find an individual guilty of possessing child pornography?
I think the situation you describe is an interesting one, and I don't know about the prosecutorial discretion in prosecuting someone who accidentally downloads one image. But in this case, I think the evidence suggested that there were hundreds of images downloaded.
Well, we objected. I hope that evidence didn't come in. We were just dealing with 32 or 36, I forget, images is what we had. They tried to get some references to other images.
Well, suffice it to say that a significant number were indeed downloaded.
That's right. Over a time span, it was not clear, but yes.
Thank you.
I do have one other point on the...
You are in your rebuttal.
You may use it, sir, if you would like. You've got a minute 6 left, so if you'd like to use it now, you certainly may.
Well, can I use just two minutes of it or something?
Two minutes and 1 minute.
Well, you only have 1 minute.
Oh, okay, 1 minute. I will wait.
That was a good try, too. I've heard some good tries today. Reserving time that you don't have, using 2 minutes and 1 minute. Can you give us, I don't want to use that word thumbnail, but can you give us an overview of the line between what Cobman says cannot be prosecuted and those things that can be prosecuted? Where's the line?
Yes, Your Honor. The line is when the Commonwealth can exclude any reasonable hypothesis of innocence. Like, given a situation where you have someone with child porn in unallocated spaces, Commonwealth can establish that it was created at a time when the defendant had sole control over the computer, then that would fulfill the elements of the offense.
Except for Cobman doesn't exactly explicitly say that. It talks about dominion and control.
Yes, Your Honor. And the problem with Cobman was that all these images still existed on the hard drive, but
they weren't accessible.
Had no evidence of when they had been put there, and there was no evidence on the record stretching back far enough to cover the period of time to prove that the defendant Cobman had sole control over the computer over the entire period. And actually, there was some evidence in the record, if I recall correctly, that it was a shared computer, one of the computers. It was
the computer he took to work.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor, and that other people had. So that obviously raised grave concerns, although, you know, and as the court said in the opinion, it was possible he may have possessed child porn at some indeterminate point in the past. I mean, that's just another way of putting that's a statement of speculation. That's another way of saying the Commonwealth can't meet its burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt on this record that Cobman was the one that put the child porn on the computer. So in this case, we have a very different situation. And one of the operative phrases that I think that was important in Cobman, I quoted in the brief, but I just want to repeat it here, is that there was no evidence on the record supporting Cobman's dominion and control. That's at pages 307 and 308 in the Virginia app version of Cobman.
So in this case, you would point to the fact that this was a computer based upon the record as we have it that was solely used by the defendant. It was password accessible by a password that was his nickname, that no one else had any access to this computer. And when you add that with the fact that he was competent in the use of Scheherazade, that all implicated him with regard to the time frame the Commonwealth was suggesting.
Yes, Your Honor, and we were dealing with a very short time frame also, I would point out. That's also relevant to the inquiry. Because if the Commonwealth was trying to get the inference that if these files were a year old when the warrant was executed and they've been in unallocated space for a year, that would be a high burden of proof that the Commonwealth would have to cover that entire period to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that nobody else accessed that computer over that period of time. But here what we've got is a period for one of the images that was, I think, four, almost 5 days, and two of the images, 9 days. And yes, in all the evidence that was on the record suggesting that Mr. Christie was very picky about making sure that no one else got access to his computer. He locked it in the room. His life partner, Ms. Pritz, she was not even physically able to enter the room that he kept the computer in. And there was just a lot of evidence supporting the idea that he had sole dominion control over that computer, and that was very probative of his dominion control over the files on that computer. So, and one thing I'd point out is that the gravamen of the offense here of possession of child pornography is that he possessed it. It doesn't matter how long of a period of time he possessed it for. So when the Commonwealth, when he was convicted of possession on or about March 1st, that encompasses the period of time where we know he downloaded, someone downloaded, and he had sole control of the computer on February 22nd or February 25th, I think are the dates of the three images. He possessed them at that point. The fact that he subsequently deleted them, put them in an unallocated space, and couldn't retrieve them again is irrelevant to his initial possession. That's a completed offense at that point when he downloads it. And so the Commonwealth's evidence was such that it could support a reasonable fact finder in finding that he had completed that possession. And again, time is not of the essence in this offense. So the fact that the date on the indictment was on or about March 1st, and he downloaded them a little bit prior to that, is not...
Do you want to speak to appellant's position that the time of is not of the essence argument, the concern about it being expansive, and what are the parameters that you put on? I think that's a follow-up to what Judge Olson had sort of alluded to or had asked.
Yes, Your Honor, and my response to that is that time being of the essence is pretty narrow meaning. It's where you one of the elements of the offense. And this is not going to open the Commonwealth up to be able to indict people for crimes, but then not tell them when they allege it happened, because we have laws on pleading, on indictments, that say that you have to have an offense date that estimates when it happened. And even if you didn't, then the defendant would be entitled to a bill of particulars once they are indicted to get more information, because obviously that's going to be a serious problem to formulating a defense if you don't even know when you're supposed to have done X, Y, or Z. So I don't think that this court finding or accepting the proposition that time is not of the essence in this particular context is going to change the law at all. I think it's just descriptive of what the law is. If you had a situation, I was trying to come up with a hypothetical, if you had a situation where someone was charged with felon in possession of a firearm on a certain date, and the evidence supported that was the date that he was found with the firearm, but then you found out that he hadn't actually been convicted of the underlying felony until after that date, time is of the essence in that case. You wouldn't just be able to amend the indictment to be later. But here it's not. It's just if we can prove that he possessed it in the time frame that our evidence covers, then it supports the conviction. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I was actually asking more about the elasticity of the time is of the essence concern that appellant had raised. And I guess he's asking us in sort of prophylactically to look at something to not allow it to go too far.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that, I mean, offenses where time is of the essence is already a pretty well-defined class of offenses, and it's not going to shrink that it's not going to threaten that. There are the concerns that Mr. Christie raised in his argument, and sort of this idea that it's going to be damaging defendants' rights to know, when they're supposed to have done a thing. They're not going to be damaged by this. They have a right to demand a bill of particulars. And then there's also on the other side of that coin the fact that in a felony case, you got the basic rule in Harris that in a felony case, the Commonwealth isn't required to prove when it occurred. Now that's subject to practical considerations, that if you got a bunch of witnesses coming in and testifying that on February 15th, X shot Y, and they're stuck to that date at that point from a factual standpoint. And then if other people come in and testify to a different date, they can't just, the date's not fungible in that sense. But let's say that someone was indicted for a crime that occurred on February 15th, and then all the witnesses came in and said that actually it was March 15th. The defendant would not be entitled to a dismissal or anything. You can still amend the indictment for good cause shown to match what the evidence has shown in Virginia up until the point that it goes to the jury, I think. I mean, it's very late in the proceedings that is still can be amended. So I guess, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be expansive in my answer here, but A, there's not a real strong right on the part of the defendants currently that's threatened by the idea of finding that this is not of the essence, the time's not the essence in this case, and B, I would reject that idea for all the reasons that I just kind of stumbled through. So, I'm sorry. So, just going back to the beginning, I guess, to boil this down, Moyer testified that the metadata reflected the date and time of file creation on the hard drive. And those orphan files were created on the 21st of February and the 25th of February, two of them on the 21st. Then the warrant was executed on March 1st. So the Commonwealth's burden was to exclude the reasonable hypothesis that somebody else put those files on the computer on those dates. And the evidence in this case did. It was overwhelming regarding Mr. Christie's sole possession and control and dominion over that computer. So, I just want to run down some of the facts that demonstrated that. He locked the room every time he left and he kept the key with him. Only one other resident was in the house and she was physically unable to enter the room. she and Chrissy both admitted and agreed that she didn't download anything onto his computer. At first, there was sort of an insinuation during Christie's testimony that perhaps he had left it where she could get to it a couple of times, but he backed off of that when he was pressed. He said, no, I don't think that she downloaded anything onto it. So that was one possible vector that was eliminated by his own testimony. His computer username and password were his nickname. He admitted that was his nickname, Bubba and Bubba 23. He admitted that he was the only person with access to the laptop in his room, which he had already admitted that he locked when he left, with his password on a secure network. So it really excluded every vector of possible placement of these files on his computer outside of either him or his testimony that he thought maybe there was some remote access software or something. But that was contradicted by a testimony of the expert Moyer, the investigator, of Pritz. She said that she didn't install, and he testified that he didn't install any remote access software. So if, you know, it was up to the jury to weigh whether there was any validity to that reasonable hypothesis that he posited, and they rejected it. And it was not an unreasonable conclusion that the jury reached in that. There was additional evidence that was probative of his ongoing acquisition and possession of child porn. The computer was actually running with Sheraza running, and he had manually started it 27 minutes before the police arrived to execute the warrant. And it was manually directed by username Bubba to download new files to the unique folder that he initially claimed to the investigator when they first showed up that something popped up on his screen and it was downloading something to a 2-3 folder. But then at trial he testified that he had never seen this 236 23269 folder, they didn't even know what it was. And all that evidence was before the jury. And it certainly wasn't probative of innocence. His initial admission of some kind of knowledge of this folder would have been backpedaling because it didn't look very good at trial because there was child pornography in that folder. That's problematic for him. And the fact that Bubba, username Bubba, had logged into Sheraza 20 times in the last 20 days before the warrant was and it's true that just owning Sheraza is not illegal. File sharing clients are perfectly legal. Well, perfectly legal may not be the right term, but they're legal. But even innocent behavior, when viewed in the totality of the evidence that was before the trial of fact, still can go to an ultimate conclusion. And here, it was alleged that he was downloading child porn using Sheraza. So Sheraza's not illegal. He wasn't indicted for using Sheraza. He was indicted for possessing child porn, and he was convicted, and that conviction was supported by evidence. So again, I would just highlight that in Cobman, there was no evidence of dominion and control over it. And the reason that Cobman's ability or lack of ability to go and retrieve these files at the time that he was caught with them is because the Commonwealth couldn't prove when he had created them. They couldn't prove when he had downloaded them. So that's really the central difference between this case and the reason why it should be distinguished from Cobman. Here we can prove, and we did prove, the Commonwealth did prove, when user Bubba had downloaded the files, and it was a very short time ago during a time period that was covered by the evidence showing that that Mr. Christie had control of the computer. In Cobman, because they couldn't prove when he had created the files, they would have needed to have proved that he could get them back somehow when they found them with them in the unallocated space. So that's really the central difference between the cases. So I would just ask that the court affirm, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Distressing, the Commonwealth says the issue here is grabbing this is actually whether you possess it or not, whether you download it. If you download it, you're guilty. That's not accurate. It's dominion and control. And if it were, in fact, just as he says, possession, and you download it, that would be common. I want to point out, Judge Elston, that you said you're making a big thing about it's Mr. Christie's got password protected, only one uses it. Yes, in Cobman. Cobman had password protected. It was his name. He was the only one who used it, and he had it from the beginning. He bought the computers. Him knew no one else used it. It's I'm, of course, only copying from the opinion, but when Mr. Jones says that the Commonwealth could not prove when it was created, I don't know where that evidence is coming from. I'm sure he has a reference to it, but it's not in the opinion that they could not identify when the images in Cobham were created. We don't know that from this opinion, let's say. So I'm more worried, though, last bit, is that if you think it is the downloading, people who inadvertently bring down a zip file, unload it, and suddenly find out Mickey Mouse is there, but guess what, so is child porn, you're guilty, according to that theory of the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All right.